Hi, I'm Anjali Dodia, and you're listening to a special presentation from Northwest Public Broadcasting. Connor Chee is an award-winning pianist who's known for blending his classical training with his Native American heritage to create unique works inspired by Navajo or Diné chants, songs, and culture.
How do you keep that that sound, the authentic sound of the original music? And I really think it's not really about that so much as creating something new. It's not classical, it's not 100% Diné music, but it's inspired by the culture and it's something that's just different by the nature of it.
Hear my conversation with Connor Chee next on NWPB. In November this year, Connor Chee was invited from his home in Arizona to the Northwest to serve as artist-in-residence at the inaugural Ruth and Lauren Olson Festival of Native American Music at Washington State University in Pullman. I caught up with him at the music school's recording studio to find out where his inspiration comes from and hear his music. And note that in this conversation, Connor and I use the terms Diné and Navajo interchangeably when referring to his nation. Connor Chee, thank you so much for speaking with us today. We'd love to hear more about your background and how your culture and classical music, how you blend them together. So maybe we could start out by you telling us, how did you get introduced to music growing up?
Well, my earliest influences that I heard when I was young were my grandfather singing traditional Navajo songs. And also just the stuff that was on the radio, country music. I started listening to classical music just from an album that my mom had that was like a compilation of classical piano. And so for whatever reason, I was drawn to that. And there was some, you know, Beethoven and Mozart. I was really interested in that music. And so eventually my dad got like a toy keyboard as a gift one year, and I was just fascinated with it and started trying to play some of the melodies that I heard on television or on the radio and started making up my own little songs. And so that was sort of where I first entered into the world of music, and specifically in the piano keyboard.
You have a unique musical footprint or style, blending classical and Diné music traditions. How did you find that unique style?
It was a journey. I started out doing the pretty normal routes, taking piano lessons and studying classical music, actually all the way through my master's degree. I was just focused on piano performance. And so after I finished my master's degree, I decided to take some time and go back home. And I'd always wanted to go back and find a way to preserve some of the culture, some of the traditional songs that get lost. And so that was my own little preservation project after I finished up my master's, to go back home to Arizona. I spent some time with my family. I spent some time with my grandfather, learning some of the traditional songs that he sang. And ultimately, what I ended up doing was blending those two things, my classical piano training and the music that I kind of grew up with. It just sort of happened very naturally. I was thinking of ways that I could, like I said, preserve this music. And since I was so familiar with the piano, I don't know why it took me so long to get there, but I decided, you know, what if I try setting some of these melodies on the piano? And so it started out as just a few pieces for myself that I thought maybe I could play in a concert where I'd play the normal stuff, you know, Beethoven and Mozart and Rachmaninoff. And it evolved as people took interest, and it went from just taking some of those melodies and arranging them to the piano to creating original compositions with new melodies of my own that incorporated some of the things that I found really unique about our traditional Diné music, the shifting meters and the tonalities and kind of the structure of things. And so it sort of evolved into what I'm doing today, where I'm sort of balancing between the classical world and also the way that we approach music in Navajo culture.
So what are you going to play for us first?
I will play a piece called the Navajo Vocable for Piano Number 9, which actually was the first arrangement that I did of a corn grinding song. When I expanded this to be a set of 12 pieces, it ended up fitting as the ninth one, but I actually was the first one that I did. So it's based on a traditional corn grinding song.
Composer Connor Chi playing his Navajo Vocable for piano number 9 from his album The Navajo Piano.
That's just gorgeous. And you also played this piece earlier in the Ruth and Lorne Olsen Festival of Native American Music, and you told this wonderful story about this corn grinding song that is included in this piece. Can you tell us that story again?
Sure. You know, a lot of corn grinding songs, there's a lot of vocables, which are just the syllables that we use to carry the melody. But they do sometimes have lyrics that will tell a story. Sometimes it's a funny story that just kind of adds some levity to this task of grinding the corn. And one theme that kind of comes back a lot is that of a crying baby. I've heard it on several different songs and some recordings that are out there, historic recordings, where basically the mother was often the one that did the corn grinding, and so dad had to play babysitter. So some of the lyrics will allude to mom needs to hurry up because the baby's crying and baby needs its mom. So some of these kind of have that lullaby aspect, which I really like. And so I included some of that in this piece that I just played.
That's so relatable. I think we've all had that experience where, you know, one parent is like, help. It takes a village for sure. You know, a lot of cultures outside of Western classical music have a very different tonality to their music, and because of the way instruments are made, you know, they don't adhere to like major minor scales. So what is it like transferring Diné music to the Western classical notation?
It was a challenge even just taking some of these melodies when I was first just taking the melodies and sort of arranging them for piano, because there are, you know, so many notes in between the notes we have on the keyboard. And there were things that my grandfather would do with his voice that I really could not authentically capture on the piano. And so, you know, really it was sort of about this being something new. Somebody had asked before, like, how do you keep that that sound, the authentic sound of the original music? And I really think it's not really about that so much as creating something new. It's not classical, it's not 100% Dinant music, but it's inspired by the culture and it's something that's just different by the nature of it. So when I first started out, all of the music that I wrote, I didn't actually write it down in sheet music form because this was for me, and so it sort of lived in my head. And maybe that just comes from this oral tradition where our music is passed down orally, it's not written down. Because they believe that there's, you know, something that you're invoking when you're creating this music. And so putting it in that fixed form isn't always like appropriate for certain things. And so for me, it lived in my head for a long time until other people had heard the recordings and asked for the music. And so I was like one by one writing these things down and then realizing I had to make these decisions to fit this style of Western notation that didn't quite align with what I would have done, you know, had I probably started out by writing it down. So even now, often when I'm composing, especially for the piano, it's something that I do in my head and I might record it how it is, and then after the fact, try and determine how am I going to make this fit in the notation, or how am I going to have to stretch this notation to fit kind of what my idea was. Because I think, especially in the classical world, you know, we're taught to really critically look at the scores, which is great, but sometimes I think you can read too much into something. And I realized that as I made the transition from being a performer to composing, that I'm writing things down and I'm like, how somebody could like look into this a little too deeply. Like if I have, you know, five beats in a measure and I want just like the whole measure filled, is it gonna be like a dotted half note tied to a half note, or is it gonna be the other way around? You know, is it gonna be 2 + 3? Really it's 5, you know? But in the score, I'm having to make these decisions that I wouldn't otherwise even think about if I was just performing it or just recording it without the notation involved. So there's a little bit of a struggle for me there. But like I said, in creating something new, I feel like that's just part of the challenge.
And important to get it notated, not just for preservation, but so other people can celebrate this music too, right? I'm sure there's probably a lot of improvisation that's involved in Diné music. When you're in a concert setting or you're playing in any kind of setting, do you find that you do a lot of improvisation at the piano when you're playing your pieces, or is it strictly set?
It's definitely not strictly set, but I wouldn't necessarily call it improvisation. It's more like a structured improvisation. Some of my pieces that I've done scores for have like these quasi-improvisatory sections where it's like guided. You have a set of notes or a certain theme that you can kind of improvise on. And, you know, depending on the space or the audience, if I'm playing a piece that I've played several times, I might change a couple things just based on that. So it is somewhat fixed in the structure. I have the idea of what I want, but I give myself a lot of leeway to make little minor adjustments or even push a few notes around. And I'm that way with people who perform my music too. You know, I'm not super strict about, okay, you must follow this score, because the score really kind of came after the fact, you know, when I composed this thing and recorded it myself. So I have like a little bit of leeway there, yeah.
Wonderful. So what do you have to play for us next?
I will play a piece from a collection called Emergence. I did a set of pieces that was just about our Diné creation stories. And so we believe we moved through 4 different worlds in our creation stories. And one of the pieces I wrote from the first world was about coyotes, the first 2 coyotes that were there, the Great Coyote and First Angry. So I created a piece that this was where I moved sort of to composing original music, not necessarily taking those melodies, but being inspired by things other than the music, like the culture and the stories. So this is about the first 2 coyotes from the first world. Thank you.
Coyotes from Connor Chee's 2016 album, Emergence. I'm Anjali Dodia, and you're listening to my conversation with Diné pianist Connor Chee, recorded November 13th at the Ruth and Lauren Olson Festival of Native American Music in Pullman.
I understand the next piece you're going to play is also from a Diné creation story. Yes. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. The next piece I'll play is called The Water Monster. And so I'd mentioned...
Sure. The next piece I'll play is called The Water Monster. And so I'd mentioned, we believe we moved through four different worlds. And in the third world, there was this water monster. Everything was going just fine in the third world until it was the coyote that kidnapped the water monster's children out of jealousy. Seeing everybody else had children and wanted a child of his own. And also the water monster's children had this beautiful hair and he wanted to have the children for their beautiful hair. And so kidnapping the children, the water monster got extremely angry and caused a great flood. I think it's interesting that in our creation stories and many other creation stories from other cultures and religions, there's this idea of the great flood. And so this is our version of that great flood that forced everyone to move upwards and escape this flood and eventually emerge into the new world, the fourth world. And the water continued to rise and follow into the fourth world until they realized what had happened and returned the children to the water monster. And so the flooding stopped, but we already by that time had oceans that still exist today. And so I wanted to write a piece that sort of told the story of the water monster and kind of from the water monster's point of view, this heartache of, you know, losing the children and this not knowing really what was happening and all of that tumultuous, you know, great flooding that sort of forced us forward in our emergence.
Thank you.
You have such a gift for creating this sort of world with your music. I can really feel the water goblin's anguish and the thunder of the anger and the justice is coming for the people that stole the child. And I feel like that comes across in all of your music. Yeah. It's such great storytelling and text painting. It's just wonderful. And I think that's why people resonate with your music so much and want to listen more. So you have a series of YouTube videos where you're playing your music from your most recent album, I believe, and you bring your piano out into all sorts of different spaces outside the concert hall. What draws you to making that decision to bring your piano into other spaces?
It was something that I resisted for a while, making music videos and recording in general, actually. But I had encountered some people that were listening to my music that wanted to also see, I think because my music is very tied to the land and to where I'm from, and not just, you know, the ideas in the culture, but also the place. And so I did eventually decide to make a music video that was in my homeland, actually where my family's originally from. And so that involved getting the piano out there in the middle of the desert. And I wasn't really sure how it was going to go. It was a challenge. But people seemed to respond really well to that first music video that I did. And I think it really kind of opened my mind to the way that people are experiencing music now, especially through social media. And certainly you listen to music, you know, in the car or on your AirPods, but a lot of people also listen to music on YouTube and on, you know, Instagram or TikTok. And these visuals are also kind of becoming part of that experience. And so I wanted to sort of, show where I was from specifically in the Navajo Nation, and also in the set of videos that I did for Scenes from Denetra, to kind of show how life is in, you know, modern society for the Navajo people, because we have such a strong grounding in our heritage, but also exist in modern society. And I thought that was really important to show as well, to sort of break down those stereotypes. I think some people envision something very specific, and I wanted to show not just the land, but the people as we are today, still engaging in things like weaving or, you know, making fry bread alongside the music that I'm creating.
So tell us about the next piece you're going to play, the Spider Woman.
Spider Woman was a very important figure also in our creation stories, and was the person that gave the Navajo people the gift of weaving. The story, as I was told it, was Spider Woman noticed one day that she had some spider web on her hand. And so she went up to a juniper tree to wipe it off on the branch and couldn't get it off, and realized the more she tried to get the web off of her hand that it was actually coming from her hand. And so she went around this tree four times, wiping the web onto the branches, and realized that depending where she placed this web, that she could start to make designs and patterns. So that was sort of where this weaving came from, and it's been passed down. And so Spider Woman was somebody that I wanted to pay respect to in my creation story pieces, because weaving has become such an important part of the culture that expresses, our ideas of kojon, or balance and beauty, that's represented in our art, that has a very specific balance to the design. And so I wanted to bring that sort of balance and these repetitions into a piece that explored, you know, repetition through different registers of the instrument, but in a way that sort of gave a balanced form that represents, where we came from and where some of our gifts came from.
Thank you.
The Spider Woman by Connor Chi, who is also pianist here.
I want to come back to this idea of weaving. As I understand it, your grandmother is a weaver.
Yes.
And what has she taught you through weaving about perfection, imperfection, and how has that had an effect on your music?
You know, I think watching her weave when I was a child, I didn't realize, I think, the impact that these memories would have on me later in life. Certainly, this idea of perfection and imperfection is related to weaving because weavers are taught to intentionally put a mistake in everything that they create as a way of showing humility and our place as humans, imperfect beings. And also this idea that something that is imperfect can be beautiful. And I came back to that thought, I think, really later in my college studies with performance, because I spent so many years with this perfectionist viewpoint of the piano and music and practicing and trying to get everything perfect for the perfect performance on stage where you don't miss a note and everything has to go exactly right. And I really struggled with that, you know, mentally being able to go on stage and give something that's really authentic while I'm so worried about the notes and every little detail that I'm afraid I might miss. And so, you know, I came back to this memory and some of these things that she taught me about weaving and that my family, you know, passed down these ideas. And that resonated with me at that point in my life where I could believe that something that is imperfect could still be beautiful. And, you know, started to realize that some of my favorite pianists ever have these recordings where they've missed a few notes, but they're still fantastic recordings that are some of my favorite. And so I really started to approach my performance a little differently, you know, practicing and making sure that I can do the best that I can, but without that weight on my shoulders of this expectation of perfectionism when I'm going to perform a piece. And that really kind of freed me up to focus not so much on worrying about missing a note, but making sure that I'm connecting with an audience, that I'm making music that is meaningful, that's music for me is about communication. And so all of those other things that go into it are important, but not necessarily the main focus. So letting go of perfectionism really actually led me to performing better. And I actually started missing less notes because I relaxed into it a little bit more and had some more authenticity, I think, in how I approached these performances.
So I understand you have another weaving song for us now.
I wrote Spider Woman a couple years before I wrote this song about weaving, and they're related because, as I mentioned, Spider Woman gave us the gift of weaving. But I wanted to do something that also represented the joy of weaving and that was connected to my memories of watching my grandmother weave. And so I created this piece. It took me a while to get started because, you know, I wanted to think about what did weaving sound like, right? How could I musically represent that? And the image that came to my mind was, as a child watching her at the loom, it looked like an instrument to me, like a harp that you could play. And so the opening of the piece started with these like harp-like figurations that were my way of sort of representing the loom, which is a really sacred thing also for the weaver. You know, they believe they have the whole universe in front of them. Each part has a different part that represents different aspects of the land and the sky and everything, the rain. And so it's so important. And I feel like music really resonates in all of these spaces. And so that was my connection that I made to actually start writing this piece. And it sort of felt much more natural after I found that connection for myself. Thank you.
Weaving, composed and performed by Connor Chi. It's from his 2020 album Scenes from Dineta, which features pieces written about elements of Navajo life and culture. It was accompanied by the release of several music videos filmed on the reservation, directed by Navajo filmmaker Michael Etzidi Jr. Link to those can be found at ConnorChi.com.
You know, I really want to know more about your grandparents, because your grandmother and her loom inspired that last piece. And your grandfather is a medicine man who passed on a lot of his music to you. Obviously, they've been a great influence on you. Is there some other wisdom that you learned from them that you think that we could all benefit from today?
You know, there was so much, I think, that was passed to me, you know, because I left home when I was 10, and there was a long time that I spent away from them. But as I mentioned before, like, some of these things that were just little things that in the time when I was younger didn't realize that they would become important later in life. And something that stuck with me from my grandmother was this idea of being organized in the smallest things. Like, if you're, you know, taking off your shoes, make sure you untie them. And if you have your jewelry, make sure it's hung up. It's not all tangled. And that came back to me also later in life, where I realized if I'm struggling with being overwhelmed with work or with school or with things that were just, you know, too much going on at once, that starting with these little things and bringing a little bit of balance to my life, even just from straightening a few things up. If I'm in my studio and there's a whole mess around me, I'm like, okay, if I'm not able to compose right now, let me start by organizing a few things. And the impact that that had on me and how that sort of changed my outlook on life with starting with these little things that are so easy to do made it more possible for me to take on these other seemingly insurmountable tasks. And that was a real gift that my grandmother and my family passed down to me that has helped me in times when I'm struggling, you know, when it seems like there's just too much going on and I just want to, like, go lay down and go to sleep. Instead, focusing on something so small and achievable was a way to bring balance back into my life and make me realize that I could do anything that I wanted to if I just started with these small things.
That is some beautiful wisdom, especially for this time of year, when I think a lot of people, you know, we're looking for some way to bring a little bit more balance back into our lives and simplify things a little bit, kind of find our center again. Well, I think your grandmother's wisdom in that area can help us out, your music as well. Thank you so much for sharing your music and your culture and your wisdom with us today. Do you have one more piece to round us out?
Sure. I can play a piece from my latest album, which was based on The Long Walk, which happened in 1864 to 1868, when the Navajo people were imprisoned by the government for 4 years. And there was some music that came out of that time period, and one that's this intergenerational song that's been passed down since 1868 is a song called Shinasha, which means I'm going or I'm walking. And it was after the Treaty of 1868, when the Navajo people were finally released from being imprisoned at Fort Sumner, and had to make the long walk back home, some 350 plus miles back to the Navajo Nation, our traditional homelands. And so after these 4 years of devastating loss and uncertainty and this exhausting journey back home, it wasn't until they saw one of our sacred mountains, Tzotzil, which is Mount Taylor in New Mexico, that they realized they actually had made it almost home, that that was the southernmost border of our traditional lands. And so that seeing that sacred mountain revitalized them. And that's where the song came from, with Shinasha, basically saying, I'm walking and I'm moving towards freedom and back to our sacred homeland. And so I wanted to create a piano version of that, that took that traditional song and also incorporated a little bit of a theme from another piece I wrote that was about the sacred mountains. And I had a theme for this sacred mountain Tzotzil that I include to sort of signify that that was what sort of got them through that last push to finally make it back home.
Thank you.
Shinasha, which translates to English as I'm walking. It's music by Connor Chi, based on the song sung by the Diné people as they traveled home. It's from Chi's 2023 album, Across the Desert, The Long Walk Home, and it was played here by the composer himself. I'm Anjali Dodia, and you've been listening to my conversation with Navajo pianist and composer Connor Chi, recorded November 13th during the inaugural Ruth and Lauren Olson Festival of Native American Music in Pullman. You can listen again and find the playlist at nwpb.org. And you can check out Connor's work at Connor Chi, that's chwe.com.